is now in session.
This episode of DG's Courtroom is sponsored by Draft, a daily fantasy app where your chances of winning are almost three times better than on FanDuel or DraftKings. On Draft, it's draft day every day. You can do a simple snake draft for one day whenever you want. Drafts take just minutes to complete. Download Draft now. Be sure to enter the promo code DFBPOD when you download to get a 100% deposit bonus. And with that, we are off. Welcome to a special edition of DG Courtroom. It is Sunday, February 19th, 2017. The All-Star Game is taking place later tonight. We're taping this right at about 6:20 Eastern Time. And I'm very excited to announce I have a special guest, Chris Axman, who many of you may know is the founder of the Almighty Baller Podcast Network, which I recently joined. But more importantly, to the listeners out there, he grew up in Dallas, so he's an expert on the scary, horrifying, brilliant, conflicted, evil genius Rick Carlisle and the Dallas Mavericks. Chris, welcome to the show, man.
Yeah, and hey, welcome to the network, too. I think this is the first time we've been on your show. So, you know, all you listeners out there, we're super happy to have the judge, and I'm super happy to talk about the Mavs. It's a specialty.
I mean, you know, as we were talking off air, the Mavs are a team in the DFS world. Very difficult team for us to kind of gauge. A lot of nights we just kind of just ignore them completely. We basically pretend the Mavs aren't even playing some nights when they have games. So it's really cool to have you on the show because Chris has insight. I mean, even before the show, guys, he was telling me stuff about the Mavs. I had no idea, and I've probably watched more Mavs than most. But there's stuff on this show, I have a feeling, that will lead us to glory, because there's going to be nights. Look, as you listeners know, when there's small slates, five games, four games, six games, whatever, when you do have to roster Dallas Mavericks players, and Chris can bring a unique perspective here that's really going to help us out going for the last like 25, 30 games going forward.
I think the thing with Rick Carlisle you need to keep in mind before we start is, if you think back to 2011, if you knew going into the finals that JJ Barea and Deshaun Stevenson were going to be playing 40 minutes a game, then we're maybe psychic, but the bottom line is you may think that, wait, why is Rick doing this? This doesn't make sense with the advanced stats, with the lineup changes. This doesn't make sense in terms of X's and O's, but 99 times out of 100, it's just that he knows better than you do. And it's like, he does all this ridiculous stuff, like three-point guard lineups, and I understand questioning it, but I mean, he is an evil genius. That's a real thing.
Yeah, no, and that's, see, this is one of the weird things about like real world basketball and DFS. Like I know he's a good coach in real life. I mean, he won a title. I mean, he's a brilliant NBA coach, but for DFS purposes, you know, he's a freaking troll because he kills us. So it's like, you know, it's kind of like you have to take a real life NBA perspective, and then you have the DFS perspective, and sometimes, or a lot of times, those are in complete, you know, they just contradict each other completely. And Carlisle is one of those coaches. Whereas I think other coaches like Jason Kidd, I think they stink in real life and DFS. But Carlisle, I think, actually is a really good NBA coach. But just in DFS, this is why we have you on. We need to figure out the evil genius that is Rick Carlisle.
Well, let me see.
I forgot. I never introduced myself. So, by the way, if you don't know who this is, I'm Judge Daniel Green. You can find me on Twitter at DanielAGreen1. And Chris, where can they find you?
At Almighty Ballin. And you can find all of our shows at ABPN Podcasts. Make sure you check out the network, almightyballer.com. You'll find a familiar face. It's Daniel. We're, again, super happy to have him. You can also find us on blogtalkradio.com/ABPN. Check out all of our shows. We've got a podcast for every team and for every topic, and including if you're a Mavs fan listening to this, the NBA draft, so you can learn a little bit more about who's going to be leading this future Mavs team, hopefully. So, yeah, good to go.
Yeah, and as I think I've told Chris, when I joined the network, I was like, you know, I'm sure most of these podcasts probably stink on the network. You know, whatever, I'll take a flyer. But then when I joined, like, Chris is not lying. Like these shows are really good on the network. So, and we all have our favorite teams. We all have teams, you know, let's say if I can't bring him on as a guest just for DFS, if you are interested in figuring out a roster or a rotation or just want to learn more about another team, check out the podcast on the network, because they're all really good and there's some really talented people. So like Chris wasn't lying when he said like go to the website, go to Blog Talk, wherever you want to look and check out these podcasts, because they're really good. They're really informative, and some are funny and entertaining too. Which if you listen to my show, you know that's one aspect of podcast that I try to bring as well. All right, but let's dive in. The first question, Chris, that I think most of my listeners will probably want to know is, so after Rick Carlisle left NASA, like why did he turn to coaching? Like wasn't NASA enough for him? Like, I don't understand.
I don't honestly really know.
Oh, my bad. Also, didn't he win the Nobel Peace Prize back in like in 2008? I just don't like, he's so smart. Isn't he just too smart to be an NBA coach?
I'm pretty sure it's one of those things like in those old sci-fi B movies where there's the main character is like a super secret agent, but he's also at the same time like a brain surgeon and a race car driver. And you know, he's like larger than life. So I think what he's trying to do is like be the best in every single category. And, you know, he's the best astronaut, the most peaceful man. So he won the Nobel Peace Prize. And now he's, trying to, once he's officially better in the record books than Greg Popovich, I'm sure he'll move on to like, I don't know, curling probably.
I mean, like, but I, there's no doubt I could see him after a game just going back to his like a secret, like special room, and then he gets like calls from the CIA, and he's like, you know, he's in charge of like some co-op mission. I totally could see it. Yes. All right, but to a more serious matter, and this is probably the one thing, and we've discussed this off the air a little bit. Like the most questions I get regarding Dallas, and even myself when I watch Dallas games, there's, and Dallas had a lot of injuries earlier in the year, especially when Dirk didn't play the first 20, 30 games or something. There's one guy that a lot of DFS players love. And even in real life, when I watch him, like sometimes he just jumps off the screen to me. But for some reason, Rick Carlisle does not seem to be a fan because he doesn't get a lot of minutes. And that's Dwight Powell. So Dwight Powell gets 18.3 minutes a game. Nine guys on Dallas get more than that on average. And he does lead the team in player efficiency rating. Not that that's the greatest stat in the world, but just, can you shed any light on the Dwight Powell situation? Is like, will he ever get minutes? Is he in a doghouse? Is there something that we don't know about him? What's going on with Dwight Powell?
Well, I think that ultimately probably Carlisle wants him to be a power forward and maybe start at the power forward. So that makes it difficult to get a lot of minutes if you're on a team with Dirk Nowitzki and your coach is Rick Carlisle. Cause I mean, if Dirk is available, Rick is going to play Dirk. A friend of mine recently was at a press conference and actually had the gumption, the huevos to ask Rick Carlisle, you know, why don't you maybe consider bringing Dirk off the bench? He's a little bit old. And Rick was just quiet for a little bit, you know, sort of looked back and forth and peered into his soul and said, you want me to bring a top 20 player of all time, a former MVP, off the bench? And, you know, he just sort of cried and crapped his pants. But that's the thing. I think that as far as Carlisle's concerns, there's a conflict there with Dwight Powell and Dirk. I think that he feels like you can't play both of them on the court at the same time. And he's going to go with Dirk every time.
Yeah, but like earlier in the year when Dirk was out, like Dwight Powell's minutes were still – they were never consistent. I mean, he would go – I don't know if he's ever topped 30 minutes this year. And there'd be games even when Dirk was out, and some of it obviously is quote unquote matchup based. You know, Rick Carlisle is one of his favorite terms, that Powell just doesn't get run on a consistent basis. And that's with Dirk out. So like on nights like that, do you have any type of kind of theory on why he won't even get minutes if there's no Dirk, and even on back-to-backs, obviously when Dirk's minutes are going to be a little bit down.
Well, yeah. I mean, another big part of it too is Rick Carlisle doesn't want to stick to rotations, but I think he does want to stick to roles. I think that he feels like Dwight Powell plays a certain role. And, you know, a big part of it is Dwight Powell, you know, maybe I think he likes Dwight Powell. I mean, the Mavs like Dwight Powell. They gave him, you know, I think, $11 million a year for 4 years. But I do think, though, that maybe Rick Carlisle has concerns that Dwight Powell's one of those guys who doesn't understand his system or isn't enough of a veteran, that if you play him too often with too many young players, it'll break the system. So what I mean is, you know, we always get these guys like Zaza Pachulia, and towards the end of the stretch last year, Zaza was just not the best option at starting center, but he was, you know, the most veteran, and he athletically was limited, but in terms of like his knowledge of the game, in terms of his grade on quizzes that Rick Carlisle gives to his players, that's a real thing. He'll give players iPads like on the team bus and on the plane with these quizzes, and you take them about his playbook, and if you do well, then you get more minutes. That's a real actual thing that happens. And I think that Dwight Powell, you know,
that's only Carlisle would do that, right? Is any other coach giving quizzes?
Well, I mean, like, that's one of the things that pissed Rondo off. But it's one of the things that Zaza liked. And I think Zaza liked it because he's, you know, a smart basketball player. He's certainly not out there starting for the Warriors because he's an athlete.
So basically, what you're telling us is that now I need to be DMing like the Mavs beat writers on like who had the highest score on a quiz, like on a game day.
Yes,
that's what we need to find out.
Yeah, I mean, that would be good to know. But you can bet that Dirk's going to score really high, and I think that's why he's been playing center. By the way, because Bogut's been injured, and it's like, who are you going to play at center? And it's weird. It's the Mavs are in a weird place right now.
All right, so I'm not done with Dwight Powell, but just let's move the show forward. We'll get back to Dwight Powell going forward. But this probably the most questions I got once I said you're going to be on the show today was regarding Deron Williams, and that's because if anyone's been following basketball and especially DFS, because Yogi Bear #YogiBear came out of nowhere, was on the D League 2 weeks ago, and all of a sudden jumped in, you know, came into Dallas, and I think like two out of the first three games, he destroyed Kyrie Irving and Damian Lillard, and has been tremendous ever since he basically was brought up to the NBA and playing for the Mavs. And obviously Carlisle must be a fan because he was giving him like 35 plus minutes off the bat. And that's when Deron Williams was out. So Deron Williams is starting to get healthier. Played the last, I think, two games before the All-Star break. Let me get your thoughts on just the point guard situation in general. Deron Williams, Yogi Bear, do we see with the Mavs trade Deron Williams? I hear a lot of rumblings out there. If so, what could they get for him? Anything you got on the point guard situation on Dallas? Because, I mean, look, right now they have – not only do they have D. Will and Yogi, they have J.J. Brea, who's been hurt, but I guess he's still going to be banged up. Is he a hamstring injury for him? I forgot what he even hurt now.
Yeah, I don't even remember.
Yeah, but they do have J.J., though. Devin Harris is still there. And Seth Curry can basically play the one or the two. So – let me know, like, what are your thoughts on the point guard situation going forward?
So starting with Deron Williams, just the other day, a couple of days ago, Rick Carlisle came out and said, he was asked a similar question, except it was not, is Deron Williams going to get traded? It's, is Deron Williams our starting point guard for sure? And he went behind that and said, like, as long as Deron Williams is on this team, he's going to be starting. We're not going to move him to the bench. There's no way that he's going to be in a different direction, a different position. So
he must do well. He must do well in those quizzes.
and I was going to say with Yogi that, I mean, right off the bat, I think it was against Memphis was his first game. Right off the bat, Yogi played a ton of minutes, and it's interesting. You see the way that he runs Carlisle's offense when he's out there, Yogi. I mean, the thing that Carlisle has always talked about with Yogi, because I mean, there's been a lot of buzz about Yogi so far because he's this D League, maybe undrafted guy. I mean, this no name who comes in out of nowhere and starts, you know, scoring 20 points a game. Actually, it's like 15, but a ton of points a game for like an actual NBA team. And everyone's like, what's the deal? And the thing is, like, Yogi Bear to me, I think, is basically playing the J.J. Barea role. And when Carlisle, I think, was working him out and seeing what he did and what he went through and when he was answering his questions, I think that Carlisle decided, based on what Yogi was saying about the game and about what he would do in specific situations, I think that that's why Carlisle decided that Yogi is this guy who deserves a ton of minutes. And Carlisle, I think, needs a guy like Yogi, basically just to synergize with Dirk, because that's what J.J. Barea was doing in the past.
All right, so do we think, though, that the Mavs are going to try to move Darren by the trade deadline?
I don't think so. Really? Yeah, I think, honestly, there's a really good chance. I don't think this lineup would ever start, but I think that there's a really good chance that the go-to lineup in the fourth quarter going down the end of the stretch is going to be Yogi, Darren, Matthews, Barnes, and Dirk. I think that's like a real possibility if we don't go pick up an actual center. So, I mean, Darren Williams is a big guy. I think one of the good things about Darren Williams is that he can cover shooting guards defensively. And what that means is that Wesley Matthews gets to cover small forwards defensively. And like at this point in his career, Wesley Matthews should not be covering shooting guards. He gets burnt. So,
right. I was going to say at this point, do you really think D. Will is capable of covering shooting guards? His body is it's a pretty broken down body at this point, right?
I think that's overestimated. I mean, he's 32 and he plays like he's 32. And he certainly has more injury issues than like a lot of people. But I mean, you think of the amount of time he's played over the course of his career. There was a point at which like there was an argument about whether he or Chris Paul was better, and not just like a 2-year period, like for the first like 8 years of both of their careers. It was like, who's the better superstar point guard? So he's played a ton of minutes. And this is just sort of what you expect from a guy who's played this many minutes. It's just sort of a reality. And you look at his numbers in terms of production, and you realize that your percentages are going to fluctuate a little bit, but Darren Williams is still, I mean, when he's getting out there, he's just putting up a reliable 16-6-4. And that's a pretty good stat line, I think, for a shooting guard. And I think that that provides a lot of things the Mavs need right now.
So if that's the kind of the line you envision going forward, I mean, that's interesting to me, because I would have thought the way Seth Curry has played that he would have been kind of part of that closing unit. But you're saying, yeah, Yogi would basically be playing the one. I mean, then again, we do have kind of positionless basketball at this point, but basically Yogi at the one, D. Will at the two, and kind of Seth Curry, that kind of leaves him out of the picture in terms of like late game minutes.
Yeah, I think possibly. Part of it is that
the one thing about Seth Curry, he obviously can space the court better than Darren Williams.
Yeah, but I mean, if we're looking at this lineup, Yogi, Darren, Wesley Matthews, Barnes, and Dirk, spacing isn't an issue at this point.
Yeah, that's a valid point. Unless you take into account Wes Matthews shooting his performance in the 3-point contest.
God. Man, that was really sad. But
really bad.
Yeah. So I think there's a couple of things at play there. So first, I think that Seth Curry is sort of evidence of this thing that Rick Carlisle in his head, it's like a stuffed teddy bear to him. Like it's something he can hold on to when he's scared at night and like the bogey monster's under his bed. It's like his safety toy is this high scoring guard coming off the bench, basically the Jason Terry type, right? Right. That's like a safety blanket for Rick Carlisle. Like it's like a go-to, exhaust port that he can like open and use as a release valve for the Mavs offense if we start, you know, falling behind. So a lot of times Seth Curry, I think, is not going to be finishing games in the fourth quarter just because he's going to be trying to get us back into games at the start of the fourth quarter. And he's probably not going to play all 12 minutes. It's just like sort of not realistic. I mean, given the fact that he's not like a superstar or anything like that, and given all of the different guard options on this team. So I would imagine that's what Seth Curry, that's what he's being groomed to do down the stretch. And I think that, for as good offensively as Seth Curry is, and for as much as he creates off the bounce and sort of, you know, can create separation to get his 3-point shot off, I don't think he runs the Mavs offense the way that Rick Carlisle wants. And also, I don't think that Rick trusts him defensively, which is a whole other thing.
Yeah, now I was going to say the one reason why that also does make a little bit of sense, because if Seth Curry is starting, you know, with Darren Williams and with Barnes and with Dirk, not a lot of shots to go around. And he's a guy, if he comes in with that second unit, he can kind of get all the shots up and he can kind of be the main usage guy with that second unit.
Right. Yeah. And I think that's important for a guy like him. Right. I think that it would be much easier for him off the bench to average, again, like a Jason Terry type, to average like 16, 18 points a game for the rest of his Mavs career than it would be to start and average those minutes. Because again, like, there's going to be a lot of possessions where it's just going to go to a Dirk ISO. And once Dirk is gone, or if Dirk is gone, then Harrison Barnes is going to be taking those ISO possessions. And then there's going to be a lot of possessions at the top of the key, you know, those classic Dirk turnaround fadeaway jump shots. And basically the staple of the Rick Carlisle offense. And the reason why I think Darren Williams is probably going to stay, because I think there's no one else who can execute this on the Mavs offense. A lot of possessions are going to come down to Dirk top of the key, draw a double team because you can't one-on-one defend that, you know, Dirk classic fadeaway at the top of the free throw line. So draw the double team, kick it out to the secondary distributor, which would be Darren Williams. But the classic example here would be Jason Kidd. Like, he's the most famous guy who catches the ball off of like a Dirk double team. And then Darren Williams now is making the decision, okay, the defense is scrambling because they feel like they can't cover this Dirk shot, so find the open man. And Darren Williams, I think, does that better than, I mean, I think the majority of people in the league at this point. So I think that's why he's probably going to stay. I think he's really important for like providing that aspect of the Mavs offense.
All right, so let's say, all right, so if Darren's going to stay, and this goes to more of a fundamental question, right? You could almost ask for a lot of teams, right now, I mean, for a lot of teams that are in the kind of the middle of the pack or somewhat battling for an eight seed in the playoffs. So right now, Dallas is 12th in the West, but they're only about three games back, quite honestly, of the eight seed. So I mean, you could make a case. Let's go young. Let's trade Darren Williams. Let's see what we can get for him. Let's trade some. I mean, I'm not sure how many assets they truly have, but are they just going to basically stand pat, or actually be buyers and try to improve the team at the deadline, or kind of just they'll probably not won't make many moves whatsoever?
I sort of hope that they at least make a few moves, like just tweak type stuff. I want Bogut to get traded. Because, one thing that's been floated a lot, and when we tweeted out the announcement that we were going to be recording this episode, someone responded, how do you think Tyler Zeller is going to affect the Mavs lineup once he's on the Celtics, or once he leaves the Celtics and is on the Mavs? And my assumption there is that he's probably talking about Andrew Bogut going to the Celtics, because at least Bogut has some potential to be a positive impact, whereas Tyler Zeller isn't. So I want the Mavs to do something like that, because I think Tyler Zeller, his ceiling as an impact guy on the court right now is a lot lower than Bogut's. Like, if Bogut gets healthy, he's just a better player in pretty much every way than Zeller. I think we need someone who can actually be out there for all 82, though, and Bogut's not going to be that guy. That's the type of thing I'd like to see the Mavs do. But I just don't think the Mavs are going to totally overhaul their roster right now, because I think that it breaks the system. You know, I think the reason why Justin Anderson isn't playing like 40 minutes a game right off the bat, like some rookies on bad teams, is because of the same reason why Kawhi Leonard only played like 12, 18 minutes a game when he was first on the Spurs and sort of got built from the ground up. It's because like Rick Carlisle is in love with his system. I think you put it in the show notes, like that he is a micromanager extraordinaire. Like, that's what Rick Carlisle is. And if you ship off all of your vets and replace them with young guys, that system breaks. It just won't run right. The machine falls apart. And I think that would piss Rick Carlisle off. And I don't think that they're going to do that to him.
What was funny about that is that you in the show notes, just for everyone listening, I put micromanager from hell, and then Chris changed it to micromanager extraordinaire. That shows you the difference between real life, like coaching, versus how frustrating he makes us in DFS. That's a perfect example. But yeah, I mean, it's like that's an interesting that makes me it's so intriguing to me because right you're talking about like we can't break the system in Dallas, but to me I would say break the freaking system because if the system is like, what's so great about the system that has them in the 12th spot right now, right? I mean, ultimately you want to contend or you don't want to contend. So I'm not saying it's the system. I think it's just the talent right now. They don't have the talent right to compete. But exactly. But you know, in terms of, you know, breaking this, what's going to break the system? I mean, in a way, aren't they already broken?
Yeah, that's what I would argue. But I think we should sit back a little bit and like look at this roster and realize that like you said, the real reason why the Mavs are losing games is because this team is not very good. Like that's right. The bottom line. I mean, we're talking about playing Dwight Powell more minutes. He was like the 45th pick in the second round in a crappy
draft. Right.
Like this is not a good team. Deron Williams is nice, but on a good team, he wouldn't be averaging 16 points a game. So if you're going with that reality and you're also looking over the rest of the roster and you see the name Dirk Nowitzki underlined, bold, italics, like Dirk Nowitzki as in maybe top 10 player of all time, the seventh leading scorer in NBA history, the best Maverick to ever wear blue, the best German player, best international player maybe in NBA history. So yeah, you realize that Dirk is still there. And yeah, maybe you scrap the system once he's gone. But I'll tell you, like, as a Mavs fan, my pragmatic NBA fan self wants to tear it to the ground. But I think you just have to be as good as possible while Dirk is here. And that ceiling is really, really low. I understand that. But like, I think it's basically what Rick Carlisle and what Cuban, what they've decided is that like winning 32 or 33 games with Dirk during his last couple of seasons is just a little bit less painful than winning 22 or 23 games. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, yeah, this is what also is really me is that, so like my favorite player is still probably is in Wade from Miami. Right. So ever since he came in the league, and it was a very similar situation, right? Wade Miami versus Dirk in Dallas. But it just seems like
Wade and the referee union versus Dirk in Dallas.
Oh, I forgot. I'm talking to a Dallas Mavericks fan. All right. So you go back to the '06 finals. Can you guys get over? You guys beat us in you guys beat the Heat in 2011. So that was it. Everything should be fine. You guys should get over that. But I mean, like, it is a similar situation, right? I mean, Wade, like that, I wanted him to stay in Miami, but they were like, nope, we're going to get rid of him because we know with Wade, we're what, at best, can get to the second round in the playoffs. And Dallas, I would argue, is even a lower ceiling than that with Dirk these days. But it is just interesting to see how kind of Miami handled that situation. They basically shoved Wade out the door, whereas Cuban would never do that with Dirk. And that's one reason why loyalty is a, you know, NBA is a nasty business, but it's cool. I do admire the fact that the way that Dallas is being so loyal to Dirk.
And let's be realistic. Like, let's like, you know, put the mushy gushy stuff aside, even though, like, to be clear, I have mushy gushy feelings about Dirk. But I mean, Mark Cuban, I'm not sure has a soul. I'm not positive whether or not that's the case. He might. But like, let's say that he's just running this like he runs any other business. Let's say he's being Mark Cuban the shark right now. Like, you know, Dallas is nice. Chandler Parsons said as much when asked about, you know, why he liked Dallas more than Houston. He was like, Dallas is really clean. And I was in Dallas just the other night at the Meyerson Symphony Orchestra, man. I'll tell you, it was beautiful. Did you see some of those pics I was taking, sending on the Slack? Yeah, no, it was a lovely time. The city of Dallas is nice. It's not as nice as Miami though. And you know, like if you feel like you can like sell this thing to a superstar player, you know, I think that LaMarcus Aldridge bit on something similar to this when he went to the Spurs. It's like sell them on like culture, franchise, like, you know, this is how we treat our star guys. Like, this is how we do things here. We're never going to abandon you. We're never going to leave you out to rot. I think that like they're banking on that being the difference for 1 out of 10 guys, because 9 out of 10 guys are going to go to Miami because it's dope and it's South Beach and Pitbull.
So your thesis is basically, it's not loyalty to Dirk. It's the fact that I can sell this loyalty, and that's what's ultimately could be my best opportunity, my best way to attract a top free agent?
I think that that's how you look at it if you're being cynical. And
yeah, again, no, I mean, it's honestly, I never thought of it that way. I mean, I just thought they were being so loyal to Dirk, but that does make some sense because, like you said,
like, think about our free agent history, man. Like,
you can't get anyone. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, yeah. Year after year, we put on our high heels and pumps and our crop tops and try to get DeAndre Jordan to try to hop in his Chevrolet and see where that goes. Right. But it always happens. The next morning we wake up and DeAndre's gone. He's back in LA. We did that with Melo, with Dwight Howard before that, with LeBron before that, we've done it a lot. That's the point. Meanwhile, when Miami finally decided, hey, you know what? We should try to get some superstar free agents. Boom, Dwayne Wade, Chris Bosh knocking at the door. Dwayne Wade, Chris Bosh, LeBron James are knocking at the door. We don't have the luxury of being Pat Riley. We don't have the luxury of leaving guys like Dwayne Wade out in the snow.
I'll say this. Dallas is not what New Orleans. I mean, actually, maybe New Orleans is not the best example. Dallas is not. I mean, I'm trying to think of a really bad city to be in. Isn't Dallas still somewhat of a big market team?
Yeah, but I think that when you think about big markets, Dallas, Fort Worth, the metropolitan area, is the fourth largest metropolitan area in the United States behind New York, LA, the Philadelphia metro area, and then it's Dallas. Or it's DFW rather. So yes, it's a large market if you're Coca-Cola or American Airlines or who else is based in Dallas? I think that Toyota just recently moved their American headquarters to Dallas. But in terms of if you were Playboy and you were trying to make a list of top 10 big market party cities, places to go find really good drugs and really good clubs, it wouldn't be Dallas.
Trust me, I made that list last night. Yeah, that's what I do.
Right.
That's what I do.
Yeah, I mean, so listen, man, you're 25, not you specifically, but imagine for a second that you were 25 years old. You'd just been handed $80 million, and you could go anywhere you want and do whatever you want. Dallas is fine. It's lovely. It's got a great independent school system, police force is well run, good municipal systems, trustworthy water, that's just not the type of thing that's appealing to an NBA superstar.
Maybe that's what Melo and Lala want. They want nice water. That's what they're looking for. Maybe they can
low fluoride or high fluoride. Whatever. Melo can decide if Melo had come to Dallas back in 2010. I'm sure we would have let him decide how much fluoride goes in the water. Don't want to come.
Yeah, I mean it's an interesting. Obviously, I knew Dallas is in Miami. It's not LA, but I still thought of it as a. Granted, I've never been there, but I still thought of it as a, it's not Milwaukee, no offense. And I'm from Wisconsin, I can say that. That's, I don't know, that's just a different spin. I never thought of it. Maybe Cubans, he's being loyal kind of as in just a sneaky way, just because he thinks that's what's ultimately that's how he can differentiate himself from a Riley and say, look, that guy's evil. He's the devil. I will stick by you forever. Come play with my team.
It's probably a little bit of both, honestly.
Yeah. All right. So interesting. All right. So let's take this back to a daily fantasy sports perspective for us. So as I was telling you pre-show, so the reason why it's so hard for us to play Dallas in DFS is because one, they're second last in pace next to Utah, and the more fantasy, the more possessions you get, the more fantasy production you're going to get, which makes sense, right? So already at the start, we're a little on edge to play Dallas guys because we know unless they're playing a Phoenix or a team like that who plays super fast or a Brooklyn, the score of that game is going to be pretty low. So not a whole ton of fantasy points. Also, as we've discussed, Carlisle's kind of an evil genius. Kind of the roster has been in flux all year long in terms of the rotation, the minutes. So in the last, what, 25, 30 games or so. And before so, you were giving me some good tidbits regarding the guys that we really can target, or just what's Carlisle's thinking going forward? Like, who do we think is going to get kind of and you kind of, like already said, kind of end the game for them with Yogi, D. Will, Wes, Barnes, and Dirk, which really we haven't seen much of yet. But anything you can give us regarding what you think we're going to see from the Mavs now that these last 25 games, as I guess they would try to get that 8 seed and try to make the playoffs.
So first, I think what I was saying at the start, I think before we were recording, is that you've got to think like a Carlisle, right? And so I was talking about the OKC playoff series last year in the first round, when Wesley Matthews and Salah Mejri were probably the two best players, except for Dirk, in the series. So what I was saying is that if you've got one superstar, Wesley Matthews is going to get 40 minutes a game, because Wesley Matthews is – I mean, honestly, I think his highest utility is he's not actually that great of a pick and roll defender or a team defender, but he is an underrated lockdown guy, I think. So if you have a guy like Kevin Durant, you're going to have Wesley Matthews, right? And then
– I mean, I basically saw him – he made Damian Lillard cry during one game this year.
Yeah. So like against the team –
he was that good defensively.
Damian Lillard's a good example. He's going to play a lot of minutes against – Paul George, Jimmy Butler, like that's the games where Wesley Matthews is going to get the minutes to produce. So then the question is at that point, like, is Wesley Matthews playing against Carmelo Anthony? Because then Wesley Matthews might go ham, because Carmelo Anthony isn't going to contest Wesley Matthews' shots very well. But like, if Wesley Matthews is playing 40 minutes a game, except he's up against Jimmy Butler and Jimmy Butler is covering Wesley Matthews, he'll get the minutes, maybe not the production though. So that's one thing to think about. But last year in the first round of the playoffs against OKC, there wasn't just Kevin Durant. Wesley Matthews was on Kevin Durant, but there was also Russell Westbrook to worry about. And then I also said earlier, if Dirk is healthy, Dirk's going to play. That's a real thing. That's just going to happen. And so what you saw is that Salah Mejri was playing a ton of the minutes at center instead of Zaza or instead of Dwight Powell. And the reason why Salah was playing over those two guys is because, I mean, if Dirk is playing a ton of minutes at the four, that's a big defensive liability. And even though Salah Mejri might not be a cog in Carlisle's defense in the way that Zaza is, he can just cover Dirk's mistakes more. And so what you saw is like Salah was getting like 20 rebounds and 10 blocks a game. So against teams with two elite scorers, you can go in and expect like I mean, in that Portland game, like, how was Salah playing? I bet he played a lot of minutes. I don't even remember.
Yeah, I honestly don't even recall Salah. All I remember is Wes Matthews' defense on Lillard. I mean, Lillard could not get up a shot. It was, I mean, his defense, especially in the fourth quarter, was that impressive.
Yeah, and I mean, like, go ahead.
No, but so my question was going to be based on that. So you're saying, so if there's kind of two superstars on an opposing team, kind of to offset Dirk's, who's going to get the minutes, kind of offset his defensive liabilities, we can expect them to play Salah more minutes. Now, if that's what you're saying, my pivot off of that would be, what if Bogut's healthy? Then would Bogut get those minutes?
Well, I mean, like, first, I really hope that Bogut's gone. Bogut throws a wrench in all of this because maybe. Like, sometimes Bogut would get those minutes. I don't think so, though. I mean, one of the biggest problems with Bogut this year hasn't even been that I think some games he just hasn't gotten the minutes because he is – if he's your starting center, then he's the most immobile starting center. He's, like, the 30th fastest center in the league if you're looking at starters.
Oh, man. Dude, we could make a list. That would be a tough battle. There's some other ones that are pretty immobile.
No, but like Andrew Bogut, though, come on. But even if Bogut is 30th,
centers, but yeah.
Let's say he's 25th.
He's up there.
Can we agree that Dirk is 30th, though, as far as starting fours?
Yes, we can. Yeah.
Okay, so I think that's the problem. Like, that's the real
issue. I would like to see a foot race between Dirk and Zebo. I would like to see it.
Well, if Dirk and Zebo were starting next to each other, I mean.
Yeah.
I think that still might be faster, man. I think, you know.
I think, yeah. But, right. I'm with you. All right.
But, I mean, like, it would be, like, good to have, like a big man Olympics with just to see who could win, like, the 40-meter dash or.
Yeah, even like a Marc Gasol, even though he's still really good. He'd be struggling to get up there. Yeah, I don't know.
Okay. He's quick-footed. He's not fast. Like, I mean.
Right. Yes.
Yeah, I mean, like, if you're talking, like, the length of the court, 94 feet, like, it's just going to be hard for, like, Dirk and Bogut to get up and down. But it's hard for a lot of guys to get up and down. It's hard for Marc Gasol to get up and down. But, like, on any given possession, the lateral quickness of Dirk is just pathetic. And Bogut at this point is also – it's like, really bad. So I think that's pretty much bad news. So I think that – man, Bogut is a hard one. Bogut's a difficult one for me, not because of Carlisle, not because of the way that he responds to his roster. Bogut's a difficult one for me because this isn't actually Fantasy World and this isn't actually NBA 2K. Whether or not Bogut's knees are feeling good on any given morning, maybe one morning he slips in the shower and lands on his knee and bruises it, doesn't break it, but or he was up late a little tonight, a little bit too late, partying with his Australian buddies, drinking Foster's, and he's just not feeling it the next day. Based on like little non-basketball stuff like that, it's going to make all the difference with a guy like Andrew Bogut at this point. And that's part of the reason why I want him gone, because I just want someone who, even if he's like worse overall, can at least be consistently at one level of production. Because Bogut, I mean, I don't know what to do with Bogut. Never pick Bogut. I mean, you guys should know that by now, though.
Yeah, I mean, he's basically unplayable. Yeah, in DFS. I mean, yeah. Because even if he plays, if he gets over 20 minutes, it's a miracle. I mean, I basically start doing, you know, a little dance in my living room because it's not going to happen. All right, so that's interesting. So Salah could be a guy to look to second half of the season, depending on if he gets traded, if he doesn't. So in terms of I'm gonna give out some names. In terms of, it sounds like you're still pretty high in Yogi. You think he could be in for a big, regardless of what happens with Darren Williams, he could be in for a solid minutes in the second half of the season. But what about if JJ ever gets back? What about Devin Harris? What about Finney Smith? What about Powell? What about Anderson? Are any of those guys ever gonna be? You know, I mean, if assuming injuries don't occur, will any of those guys other have somewhat of an important role going forward here, or you just don't see it?
So I would assume that Devin Harris's role in fantasy is just to make your life hard, because he is going to, I mean, he's not like a regular part of the rotation, but if Seth Curry has a couple of blown defensive assignments, he could have made the last 5 3-pointers in a row for the Mavs. He could be on fire offensively. But if Rick Carlisle decides that he's not doing his job defensively, he's going to put in Devin Harris, who will also fail to do the right thing. But I don't know. You know how coaches are with veterans. So I feel like Devin Harris is probably like, the monkey wrench, I guess, in your fantasy plans. Like, because, I mean, if Seth Curry looks a step slow and Damian Lillard blows by him and lays up on him or whatever the case may be, Devin Harris is going to see the court, and you can never pick Devin Harris because he doesn't actually produce anything. So, I mean, stay away from him and, you know, actually, like, probably watch the opposing point guards, because if Seth Curry is covering a guy like Jamal Crawford, Devin Harris is probably going to go in, because if Jamal Crawford scores a couple of times over Seth Curry off the bench, then Rick Carlisle will probably decide it's Seth Curry's fault and replace it with Devin Harris, who still won't fix the problem. But I mean, Rick Carlisle will feel better about it anyways. Down the stretch, if JJ Barea is healthy, probably the last 20 games of the season, he's probably going to average like 23 points a game. He does it at the end of every season. Everyone always says he's not going to. I understand the argument for why, oh, but this year he's been injured all year, he's not going to be able to do it. That was true last year. And I'm not promising you that JJ is going to go ham, but if you assume that he's not, you're going to get burnt. So I would expect
he's always been one of those guys, whenever he plays and whenever he gets like 20-plus minutes, he's always been a fantasy point per minute guy. He's always put up big numbers in limited minutes. Like, just, I mean, as far, for the last 3-4 years, it seems like.
Well, I mean, what it is it's that's always been true if he's been on the Mavs. When he was on the Timberwolves, right. He was terrible, and it's because of the way that he synergizes with Dirk Nowitzki. Over the course of Dirk's entire career, the point guard who runs the best pick and roll, the best like pick and roll slash pick and pop partner, if you're looking at the advanced statistics with Dirk, is J.J. Barea. That's why J.J. Barea was starting or playing 40 minutes a game in the 2011 finals, like I was saying at the start of the show. Like, J.J. and Dirk are, you know, BFFs, like basketball friends for life, basically, is what J.J. and Dirk are. But, I mean, if J.J.'s not healthy, don't, like, assume he's just going to magically become healthy. But if he is healthy, if he's actually playing, like, towards the end of the season, I'm not sure if the Mavs are going to make the playoffs this year. It seems a little far-fetched, but I wouldn't be surprised. But if they do it, it'll be because J.J. Barea starts averaging 25 points a game for the last 20 games.
So would he cut into Yogi's minutes or Darren Williams' minutes or a little of both?
Well, he would, yeah.
Or Seth Curry's minutes. Because he's another guy who also can come in with that second unit and give them instant offense.
I think that it would be all of the above, but the guy whose role he would probably take from under him is Yogi.
Okay.
But I think that, you know, I mean, also Darren Williams is going to miss a lot of games. It's hard to know who's going to be good for the Mavs point guards, like, just based on who's going to be healthy, right? Because, right. I mean,
which is,
yeah. If JJ's healthy, he will produce. If Darren Williams healthy, he will probably produce. And if they're both not healthy, then Yogi Ferrell will definitely produce. If Devin Harris is not healthy, then, like, Rick Carlisle doesn't have the option of pulling Seth Curry off the court. So you could bank on, if Devin Harris is out, I would probably spring for Seth Curry, because there's no chance that he's going to get benched for no reason.
So let's take the case that they're all healthy, which I think after the All-Star break they will be, except that JJ still might be out. But if they all are relatively healthy, do we think any of them will get over the 30 plus minutes, or will Carlisle kind of troll us all in the DFS world and give them all 20 to 28 minutes?
Well, you know, I think for the next 20 games after the All-Star break, you can probably bet on Yogi Ferrell getting like 30 minutes a game or around there anyways. But really, I mean, if you look at the state of the Mavs point guard position, even when it was Jason Kidd, he was getting like 28 minutes a game. It's just not really Rick Carlisle's thing to play any point guard like that many minutes. He didn't even play Steve Nash that many minutes. So, no one's going to get like 36 minutes a game unless just like everyone is wrecked, or it's the last 20 games of the season. J.J. Barea is going to get like 40 minutes a game. Like that's just like, I'm stressing that a little too much just because like it's something to keep an eye out for. Like if you start looking at like the last few games that the Mavs have played and seeing like, oh man, J.J. had 20, 30, you know, 25, 22. Something's going on there that you should pay attention to and maybe try to snag him. But yeah, to answer the original question, no one's going to get a ton of minutes. Like you're going to have to be approaching these guys as value propositions rather than just like raw big production, like possibilities.
All right. And last couple questions regarding rotation stuff. So, on back-to-backs, obviously, you know, Mavs are always banged up. We mentioned the whole point guards, who's going to be healthy. We don't know. Dirk's, you know, what, 60, 65 years old. So do you think he'll play? And if they really are going for the eighth spot, it's hard to rest guys now because if they really are trying to get that spot where they're three games back right now, but they're 12. So there's, you know, 4, 5, 6 teams still battling for that eighth seed. Will they be resting Dirk on back-to-backs? If not resting, how many minutes do you think he'll be able to get on back-to-backs? And if he does happen to be out, which big, you know, here it comes back to Paul. I mean, which Salah? I mean, which guy should we kind of look to? Because, I mean, the theme that I'm getting so far of this show, and this is a long – I turned this question into a soliloquy. But the theme of the show and what Carlisle seems to be, he's going to go with who he trusts.
Which, yeah, and- You know, that my answer to that is the guy who we trust more, which or trust the most to play the four. And the answer to that is Harrison Barnes, man. I think that that's the answer. Like, that's who's going to play four.
So then if Barnes goes to the four, would he just – then who would – I guess what
you – I mean, like, he probably wouldn't start at the four. Like, probably Dwight right. would start at the four and play, like, 4 minutes and then get taken out. Right. But, like, I think late game – yeah, I mean, I think Harrison Barnes would move to the four. That's what happens most of the time when Dirk is out. That's what has been happening, is that Dirk's role in the offense has Harrison Barnes has performed it as well as he can. Is basically what's happening.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at usage rate, whenever Dirk's out, Barnes gets a big bump in usage rate. I mean, and those are the days that I attack Barnes when Dirk is out.
And those are the games that they go to him in ISO possessions. If you look at the amount of – this is a fun fact. 55% of Harrison Barnes' shots are taken during the last 10 seconds of the shot clock. You know that?
Which is pretty amazing, but pretty amazing in, like, the modern NBA.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, it just means that, like, basically he's that release valve in the offense. It's like, okay, we ran our stuff. Nothing worked. Let's just, like, go to Barnes and ISO and hope that it works out. And at the start of the season, he was like a top 10 isolation player in terms of points per possession. He's come down a little bit, but he's still, like, at, like, 1.05, 1.1 points per possession in ISO. He's still, like, up there. And so, I mean, Harrison Barnes, I think, like, the offense doesn't really tick without Harrison Barnes, because after – you run everything you can, after you do all of your actions and nothing works, Harrison Barnes is going to get the ball in his hands.
Yep. So out of the Finney, Smith, Powell, Anderson, do you envision all three of those, unless some major injury occurs, those three are just going to be, you know, just never – it's going to be – because Carlisle probably doesn't trust any of those three guys enough to give solid, consistent minutes for the rest of the year. Is that fair to say?
Well, if it's a matter of trust, I think that if one of them is going to get minutes, it's going to be Justin Anderson. Justin Anderson hasn't been hitting his shots though. And like the fundamental reality of like a Rick Carlisle offense is if there's no one out there hitting their 3-point shots, then like nothing's going to work. Like you need everyone spread out because you have to, you know, first create defensive mismatches and then exploit them and get the defense scrambling. So if they can just leave Justin Anderson, like just out there on the 3-point line and not actually cover him, then he's just not going to get shine. Like he's just not going to get minutes. But like if you see him starting to float back up towards like at least 35, 36% from three, then he'll probably start to get minutes. If I had to guess who will play the most minutes though, I would guess that it'll probably be Dwight Powell, because I'm not entirely convinced that the Mavs are going to make a move for a center. And again, I hope that they do. But I feel like Dwight Powell is at least going to be guaranteed some minutes, because like who else is going to play center, you know?
Yeah. I mean, besides Salah, I mean, I don't, you know, that's the only other guy, right? And Dirk, I mean, the other two guys could play the five.
Yeah. And that's just like, that's just not like the greatest thing in the world. And so right. That's sort of what I'm saying. I mean, you know, Dwight Powell is like I was saying, I'm not sure.
I can sense you turning to our side. You are now going to be a lover of Dwight Powell. I can see it. I can see it happening.
I don't know, man. Like I wouldn't be surprised if Dwight Powell was really good. I clearly, you know, there are reasons on paper to think that he's good. He's, you know, over the last few years had an amazing conversion rate as the pick and roll finisher. And then off of paper, once you're, you know, watching games, he plays defense like he's a wing, like he's a three, yet he can play the five in spots. And like, that's incredibly valuable. That's awesome. But like, he also is sometimes like a bit of a bonehead. He was supposed to be a great 3-point shooter. At least he looked like that in the last couple of summer leagues, but he's shooting 25% from three on the year, which is not going to cut it. There's reasons to like and believe in Dwight Powell. I get that. I just like, I'm not there. I'm not there one way or the other. I'm not convinced that he's awful, and I'm also not convinced that he's great. I just don't really, like, we'll see what happens, you know?
Yeah, the only person shooting really worse than Dwight Powell from 3-point range is Andrew Bogut, which is depressing.
Is that a real stat?
Quincy Acey, which I don't think counts anymore. But yeah, the Dwight Powell is 24%. Dwight Powell is basically last on the team because Bogut and Salah are both 0%. So basically, Powell's last on the team.
Yeah, so that's what I'm saying, right? Like
And I will say that there's games, and this goes to the question, I guess, what position it really is he, but it's part of this modern NBA positionless basketball. But there were games where I saw him, you know, he was basically must have been playing the 3-4, and they had him in the corner trying to take threes, and he was missing everyone. And then I saw him get taken out. And so if they're looking for spacing, I could see that being a reason why he's probably not the best play.
Yeah, I mean, like you're gonna be guaranteed at least some minutes, especially if you're not playing like a vital position. Like if you're playing, if you could play alongside Dirk, which Dwight Powell marginally can, let's say you're a small forward. Like if one of these days Nikolai Brusino, or if Justin Anderson or Dwight Powell could maybe play the three in spot minutes, but I'm not so sure. And then they had one other D-League signing. I'm trying to remember his name. Who's the other small forward? He's been getting some shine. Whatever. If I remember his name, I'll let you know. But like, bottom line, though, if one of those threes just starts hitting their shots, like from three, they're going to get those minutes. Like they're not key parts of the Mavs offense. They don't like totally run the Mavs offense. So it's like if you're, regardless of whether you're wing, a guard or a center, like if you go out and start hitting threes for the Mavs, then you're important just so Rick Carlisle can do the things that he wants to do on the offensive end.
So in terms of like Dallas ever playing at a faster pace, do you think that just that can't change, one, until they get rid of Dirk or Dirk retires, or is it more of a system thing? Because like we said, Carlisle, he micromanages the hell out of his teams, and he basically still, I think, calls every single offensive play. And so like, do we think that they're ever going to be able to change that pace, or is that Dirk, is that Carlisle, a combination of both? What do you think that is? Maybe it's talent. Maybe it's all three.
Yeah, it's all three. I guess there's a ceiling on how fast you can run. No, honestly, I think that Rick Carlisle, man, like people want to like criticize Rick Carlisle for micromanaging the team, for, you know, doing certain things, for playing slow. But like the reality is, like, man, look at this roster. Any other coach in the NBA would have 5 wins right now. They are every bit as bad as the Nets, are they not? Like, seriously,
I'm again, this is where you have to separate, remember, DFS from real life NBA, and I think from real life NBA he's doing a fantastic job. Like, playing slow gives them the best chance to win.
Yeah, I mean, like, just on like a you know, if you're a statistics major or if you're a math nut out there, like just in terms of like, you know, back and forth, like scoring, if you can keep the points low, then there's less variance. You're not going to get blown out as much. And if you're in the game going into the fourth, then like anything can happen, right? I think if Rick Carlisle, if tomorrow it's announced that the Warriors traded every single one of their players for every single one of the Mavs players, right? If they just swapped rosters, I think that Rick Carlisle would not run every play, obviously. But I mean, right now, like, you know, I think that it is what it is, you know?
Right. All right. So we're just about done. I feel more enlightened, but also more sad at the same time. I feel very confused. I'm gonna need a couple hours to take this all in. I can't.
Well, welcome to the life of a Mavs fan.
Right? I feel like I'm a Mavs. I don't know if I'm a fan, but I'm an insider. so let's talk real quickly future of the Mavs. So we've already mentioned it's been tough for them to get talent. Now, you've kind of given me some insight onto the Dallas area, which I thought on paper looked very lovely, but maybe it's besides the water and the school city, system.
I'm just saying, for an NBA player, for an NBA superstar.
Right. Yeah, no, I got you. Unless they're, you know, they're looking for schools or nice water. Where do we think that they're going to go? I mean, is it really just is the franchise just kind of have to wait till for Dirk to retire? I mean, who would they target kind of in free agency, if anyone? Obviously, the draft picks aren't going to be great because they're stuck in this middle, you know, trying to get the 8th seed. If not, so even if they don't fail to, even if they fail to make the playoffs, they're not going to get a great pick. So just kind of thoughts on what the future holds. If, I mean, it doesn't, you know, it's obviously not Brooklyn Nets bad in terms of optimism, but is there, I mean, what's like the most optimistic things you guys have going for the Mavs right now?
So I think the most optimistic thing, and this is going to be a sort of roundabout answer. So, it's going to be a little bit annoying, but I guess the thing that makes me most optimistic is that Dirk was the 11th pick in his draft. Because like that's where the Mavs are going to be picking from now until forever. Rick Carlisle is too good of a coach. Like, I mean, the Mavs gave him a terrible roster, and then everyone on said terrible roster got injured. Like everyone, except for Harrison Barnes, who like, was the worst player on the Warriors starting lineup last year. And for Rick Carlisle, he's a 25 points per game scorer, right? So we can only be so bad. But, you know, I think that that doesn't mean that it's impossible to get a number one player. So, I mean, you look at next draft, I think that people right now, there's a lot of buzz among fans and among the media about a guy like Lonzo Ball. But I think once teams start working out with him, once they start looking at that jump shot a little bit closer, you know, once they are, you know, having him work out in the gym and like looking at his, you know, his muscle definition and like his, you know, stats as like a prospect rather than like what he can do in the full court, I think they're going to get a little shied off of him. So maybe Lonzo Ball, you know, falls to the 6th, 7th, 8th pick. Maybe Malik Monk is as amazing as a shooter as he looks. And if you're a shooter like that, like the bottom line is you're Steph Curry. It doesn't matter if you're a poor athlete. If you could shoot 50% from three, you're going to be a star, bottom line. So maybe the Mavs get a guy like that. But that's our future. Wherever we end up in the draft, hopefully we're not like in that no man's land of, you know, 10th through 15th pick, right? Hopefully we're top 10, probably never going to be top three, but – you know, that is what it is. You just have to land that pick 1 through 10.
Right.
And hopefully we do.
Right.
Cause that's it. I mean, we're not going to get DeAndre Jordan. We're not going to get Melo. We're not going to get LeBron in free agency. We're not going to get the number one pick in the draft. We're not going to trade for Rajon Rondo. He's not going to come on the team and like average a triple double and bring us to a championship. Like if we're going to be good, we need to draft like a new generational superstar or two. That's sort of it.
Yeah, I mean, ultimately, so even though it was kind of like a running joke with, especially in the DFS community, whereas Carlisle is the smartest man alive, that's partly like true. He's like almost too smart for you guys. Too smart because he doesn't allow you guys to be a talent wise, you should be a bottom what 4 or 5 team, but because of his brilliance, it puts you guys in a kind of you could say better or worse spot depending on how you want to look at it. But in terms of like a lottery pick, it's probably, you know, not, it's, he's just too good of a coach and you're not going to have enough loss. Your record's going to be better than it should be. And therefore, you know, it hurts you guys in like the draft and in terms of kind of your future. You can make a case that it's probably may not be the best thing for the franchise, right? It's in like a bizarre way.
You can make that argument. I wouldn't personally. I was sort of saying like this team, this roster is awful. It could be worse. Like that's a real thing. I mean, if we went out and hired Sam Hinkie could put together a roster. I assure you that Rick Carlisle would not be able to get above 15 wins with. I think that if you the degree to which you want to rebuild has to be up to management.
Yeah.
if you want to tear it down, like, there's nothing left to tear down. But if you want to just burn it to the ground, like Heath Ledger Joker style, then, like, there's a few scraps left to burn to the ground. Like, you can move Harrison Barnes if you want. Like, you know, you can get rid of Seth Curry. But, you know, I mean, I think that, you know, just moving on from a coach like Rick Carlisle, and Rick Carlisle's not young, but he's also not super old. I mean, he might be the Mavs coach for like 15 more years. He's already the second longest tenured coach in the NBA, yeah. Right in front of Spoelstra and right behind Greg Popovich. And I mean, between the three of them, there's a reason why they've been head coaches on their teams for longer than anyone else. They're probably the three best coaches in the league. And that's not quite as valuable an asset as a superstar player, but it's pretty far up there, I think.
Yeah. All right. So, I mean, yeah. And ultimately spinning it back kind of full circle to a DFS perspective, then I would say, guys and listeners to the show, what are we going to do with the Mavs going forward? We must get the quizzes. It all comes down to, we need to get those dang quizzes, man. So, Chris, will you help us out somehow? We need to figure out a way we can do this off air to get our hands on these quizzes. Also, I just want to know what kind of questions are there? Are they super in depth? Like, is it like, you know, if you have a pick and roll with 4 minutes to go, you know, I wonder just how tricky they are.
Also, I have some actor friends in Russia I can get in contact with, and we'll
oh,
get.
Oh God. But it would be awesome if one day on one of our Twitter feeds or something we just post a Dallas Mavericks quiz. That'd be awesome. But all right, so I mean, interesting. I feel more enlightened. I don't know if ultimately I feel weird. I feel many mixed emotions, but I definitely feel more informed. So I can't thank you enough for coming on the show, Chris.
Yeah,
it was definitely insightful. Definitely stuff that I would not have been able to share with the listeners regarding the Mavs. I mean, you definitely brought different dimensions that I just didn't know. So it's to me it was very helpful. Now, will it help us make money in DFS? Yet to be seen. But in terms of the type of information you let us know, I thought it was really good, and hopefully the listeners will agree.
Yeah, hopefully and go check out my podcast. You take out all the fantasy aspects of this and just look at X's and O's, advanced stats, like sort of scheme out on the court. That's Almighty Ball and NBA Show. That's my podcast, also on the network, almightyballer.com, blogtalkradio.com/ABPN. And you can follow me on Twitter at Almighty Ballin. And, there's no one better than Daniel at fantasy. I wouldn't want to try to be slinging any of my stuff on his corner. But a few quarters down, if you want to know about X's and O's and analytics, check out Almighty Ball and NBA Show.
Yeah, and I would just say to all the listeners out there, man, like, you hear me all the time on this podcast, you know, rail at all the other DFS shows and how they don't know basketball. And they're basically having computers spit out random generated lineups that are really crappy, and they're giving you bad advice. And sometimes, like, it does help to know what's going on, like, just in the real world basketball terms, and from a guy who actually can break down and tell you what's going on from a particular team. And Chris on this show, I think, hopefully shed some light on that for us with Dallas. And we basically have, you know, with the Almighty Baller Podcast Network, guys, we can check out podcasts from every dang team. And I'm telling you, it will give us a leg up. Like there's stuff that we'll be able to use that the other players won't. And you know, we don't have to, and I'm telling you, we don't have to waste our time listening to only quote unquote DFS podcasts. And so I think a lot of the just podcasts about the actual teams and what's going on will give us a leg up. And give us information that other people just don't have. So I really do. I am with Chris, and I think we just feel free to check out any, if there's just another team you enjoy, or if there's a team in DFS that's frustrating you and you want to get to the bottom of it. Like, you know, what other team is giving out quizzes? Maybe we need to find that out. So like Chris said, check out, you know, the Almighty Baller Podcast Network. And also, Chris, I can't thank you enough for coming on. I know you're a really busy man right now. We have how many podcasts on the network? 40, 30, 35?
I think it's 40. I think 40.
Yeah, I mean, which is insane. So,
well, you know, one for every team, you know, you got like, yeah. That's a lot.
Yeah. So obviously Chris is busy. So, you know, we really do thank him for coming on the show. And, yeah, so Maybe if something else happens with Dallas. Now, if something does happen with Dallas, you guys know who to tweet to.
If you want, like, just so everyone's clear, I cover the whole NBA, right? Like, if you want to know what's right. happening with any team, I mean, that's me.
All right, so I changed what I just said. If you want any NBA question in general, come to Chris. And if you want to get those quizzes, obviously go to Chris as well. Although I will be trying to work my magic to get those as well for us. All right, that's it. So as you guys know, I am the judge. You can follow me on Twitter at DanielAGreen1. And this is a special edition of DG Courtroom. It's All-Star break. Hopefully coming this week, in the next couple of days, I will get some more guest hosts to give us crucial information like Chris just revealed regarding the Mavs, regarding other teams. Maybe I think hopefully some a Brooklyn, maybe a Bucks, a Utah. So I will keep you guys posted. Chris, real quickly, where can they find you again on Twitter?
At Almighty Ballin. That's me.
There you go.
Oh, and all right, so that's podcast for the whole network.
Nice. All right, so there it is. For me, the judge, the bailiff, for Chris, court is adjourned. Enjoy the All-Star game, guys, and we'll hopefully be back with another new show tomorrow. All right, bye, guys.